Welcome to Painting Corners, your weekly podcast for all things baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Austin Hartsfield and Dave Kwiatkowski.
Welcome to episode 5 of Painting Corners. We didn't have any game 5, so let's go ahead and jump into the NLDS. Dave, you're with me again, Dave Kwiatkowski.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Same shit, different day.
That's true.
Same shit, different day. So let's go series by series real quick. Quickly recap the DSs. Astros take care of business really quick. Like, it wasn't even a contest.
Yeah, we'll start off in the AL. Probably where the powerhouses are this year. No disrespect to the National League, but the Astros showed why they're the defending champs. They showed why they won their division. They showed why they're favorites against the Red Sox coming up in the ALCS. They sweep Cleveland. They finished off in Cleveland with a thumping 11-3, I believe. And their starting pitchers were looking great. Keiko looked okay. And by okay, he did exactly what Porcello did, which was pitch really well for 5 innings against a good team. So the Astros continue to roll. The train keeps rolling through above the stadium and on the diamond for them.
I hate that train.
I love the train. Send the train, baby.
So let's go to the other ALDS. We took care of business.
Yeah, you know, the Red Sox, our Boston Red Sox here at Painting Corners. We do have a little bias here, even though we're a national coverage podcast.
Especially on the Twitter. The Twitter is very skewed.
The Twitter, you know, you got to take it for what it is. We like the Red Sox around here, and they took care of the Yankees the first time that those two teams have ever met in the ALDS, which is an absolute mind-blowing stat. They've been playing baseball against each other for 100 years. They've never met in the divisional series. It didn't disappoint. It didn't go 5 games, but it was a very entertaining 4 games. Games 1 and 2 in Fenway, very back and forth. Either team could have had them. Game 3 was an absolute blowout. It was good for every single team watching, probably except for Yankee fans, as they got beat 16-1, the worst loss in franchise history for the Yankees. And Game 4 was a nail-biter at the end, but it wasn't really close until that ninth inning. I think it was 4-0 going into that ninth inning, and Kimbrel made it interesting. Yeah. 4-1. Wasn't very close, though, as Porcello pitched great, the pen pitched great. Chris Sale came out in the eighth inning. Very Madison Bumgarner-esque from their World Series against the Royals coming out of the pen. It was for about 4 innings with Bumgarner then, but Sale could have went through the ninth and probably dominated the lineup just the same.
I mean, Sale came in, dominated, did his thing, and then we popped bottles after Kimbrel tried to give it away.
Yeah, Kimbrel just wanted to make it interesting. Gary Sanchez almost hit a pop-up grand slam out of Yankee Stadium, which I love watching Christian Vasquez hit a 339-foot game-winning home run. If anyone had that pegged for the beginning of the season, how the Red Sox would win the ALDS against New York in New York. But enough about discussion about the Red Sox. Red Sox win that series 3-1, move on to play the Astros at home. We're going to jump over to the National League, where another absolute bloodbath of a series, the Brewers and the Rockies.
Yikes.
The Brew Crew stays hot. They've won 11 in a row. They swept the Rockies. They had a walk-off, I believe, in Game 1. Was it Austin?
Yes, Mike Moustakas.
Moose, exactly. A player that a lot of teams had interest in, but a team that I never thought would get him was the Brewers, because they had Travis Shaw. They moved Travis Shaw over to first base. The Mara Ding Dong Saves have an absolutely huge infield, especially corner infielders. They win that series. Their bullpen dominated. Their lineup dominated. I'd say it's the second best lineup behind maybe the Dodgers in the NL out of all the teams that were in the DS and stuff like that. And it's close. The Rockies, I thought, you know, I had them winning in 5. You know, hand up.
I had four.
Really wrong. You know, I thought they had a little magic to them. I want to be a little different than anyone picking the Brew Crew. I won't make that mistake again, as the Brewers just absolutely dominated that series from start to finish, really.
It was like they had a chip on their shoulder, a lot like this Christian Yelich MVP season. Basically, the Marlins didn't want him, so he just wanted to prove to everybody that he was a damn good player. And I think the Brewers have proved that to me. They've proved it to you. Pretty much proved it to the rest of the league, and they're on to the NLCS.
Yeah, and I mean, Christian Yelich was one home run away from the cycle, away from the Triple Crown this year, which is a very good feat. One home run, one RBI away.
Yeah, and that's incredible. We almost had 2 Triple Crowns this year, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah. So next series was something that I believe I hit right on the head. Dodgers, Atlanta in 4. I believe I said that. So I made up for that as after the ugly Rockies Brewers. the Dodgers looked really good against a team that I said would lose regardless of who they played. You know, Atlanta was young, the baby Braves. These pitchers, I mean, you look at some of the pitchers that came in for the Red Sox. You know, look at Ryan Brazier in game one, threw the ball everywhere but where it was supposed to go. And, you know, you look around the league at some of these guys that came in, first-year guys, rookies that were young besides Acuna, and they struggled in their first game. But the problem was that a lot of first games like that in Atlanta, as they had Fulte, Sanchez, Wood. I mean, they had a bunch of first-time guys. There are guys that haven't pitched in a long time. And they got beat by the Dodgers. I mean, they got shut out in the first two games. They didn't score a single run. So they got pretty much dominated through that series.
And it wasn't even close. Like, Dodgers came in with that we've been here attitude and we're trying to get back, and just dominated the baby Braves in pretty much every single statistical category. Not a fun series to watch. I mean, the Braves showed up in game three just to kind of put on a show. I think Major League Baseball is kind of cringing after this division series just because of the fact that they didn't have any game fives.
And no game fives.
Just Rob Manfred just roll over at this point.
Oh, money-wise? Absolutely. I mean, they had two sweeps and no game fives. It's almost worst-case scenario when it comes to league-wise. And that Atlanta game, that game three, you know, they won it 6-5, but, I mean, they had one hit. It was Acuna, his grand slam, who's an absolute monster. He's a freak. But, you know, you take that one hit away and they didn't really do much.
No. And really, I mean, it was like the first round of the basketball season, if you think about it. Everything was either a sweep or it went five games. There was no really competitive series. It was just actually pretty much embarrassing.
It was. And, you know, very rarely, other than the NBA, do you see, you know, the 1 and 2 seed make it to the championship series, right? But that's what you have this year. You have the, you know, Brewers who won the National League after that play-in game with the Cubs, and the Dodgers are the 2 seed. And then on the other side, playing game. And on the other side, you have the Red Sox, who were the league winners. You know, they won the MLB with 108 wins. And then you had the number 2 team in baseball, which is the Houston Astros, and the number 2 team in the AL. So this could be a very interesting matchup. You could have 2 number 1 seeds. You could have a 1 and 2. You could have 2 number 2s going into the World Series. Doesn't happen often.
That it doesn't. We're going to get back to the playoffs here in a second. I want to talk about Didi just for a second. Didi Gregorius having Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, just brought up as we were prepping for this podcast, Twitter exploded with Yankee shortstop Didi having Tommy John. Aaron Boone says he thinks he's going to play more than a chunk of the season for the Yankees, which I find hard to believe. I believe it's a 1 year to date surgery, similar to an ACL. Now, I know he's a shortstop and, you know, maybe a little bit differently. Doesn't have to throw the ball 100 miles an hour, 100 times a game.
Where's Corey Seager?
Exactly. Where's Corey Seager? I mean, he also had that knee or hip thing as well. So maybe that kept him out longer as two. But I don't think he's going to play next year. And if he does, it won't be till well after the All-Star break. I mean, you've got to think Manny Machado is going to be in New York, right?
Manny Machado, maybe trade for a guy like Elvis Andrews. Gleyber, I guess, will probably move over. Maybe Torres plays second next year. That sounds so weird. But I guess, no, Neil Walker could move back to his original position. But, I mean, they're running out of options.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I think if they go get Manny Machado, which I think at this point they will, Didi's coming up on a contract year. He's going to want close to $15, $20 million. He already makes 10, and he needs an upgrade. He had a career year this year. You know, regardless of playing in Yankee Stadium or not, he still did it. And he's not a defensive liability out there either. So I think Manny Machado. Yeah, good range. I think Manny Machado ends up in New York. He's the perfect Yankee, in my opinion. And I think you see a guy like Andujar or Torres go to first, realistically. I don't think Machado goes to third, per se. But I wouldn't be surprised to put, you know, somebody, one of those young guys at first base. You don't know what you're getting out of Greg Bird at this point. You really don't.
Yeah, and even the fan base is done with Greg Bird.
The fan base is kind of done with Greg Bird. And, you know, the Yankee fans are similar to Red Sox fans where they overreact after the first couple times, for better or for worse, right? But, you know, I think that they move somebody over. And they just have this unbelievable. Andujar's a liability. He needs to grow just like Devers does in Boston. But I think if you move Andujar at first, and can Torres play third? If not, Manny Machado can play third. you play third base well. Put Glaber at short, Andujar at first, figure out a second baseman.
But he's not a third baseman, Dave.
That's true. Manny Machado's not a third baseman. He did say that before he was traded out of Baltimore with that lovely attitude that he had, and then directly went over to the Dodgers and played a little third base.
Yeah, so that's enough of Yankee talk. Touched on it a second. They still have Hechavarria, which, I mean, he made a pretty good play at third. But let's go ahead and get back to the championship series. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in the juggernaut, right in the thick of it in the AL. I mean, you have arguably two of the best teams in the past, I don't know, 10, 20 years?
Something like that.
In the AL?
Definitely the five.
Definitely the five. I mean, you look back at the 2001 Mariners. They won 116 games. They broke the major league record. They lost in the ALCS, I think in like five or six. Like, it wasn't really close.
And they weren't competitive either.
They weren't competitive either. So that team won 116. This Red Sox team, the closest AL team to do it in a while, right? The Dodgers won like 112 a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And this Red Sox team, that Dodger team, this Houston team, some of the best teams in the last 10, 15 years, going up against each other in the LCS. I mean, this is like a World Series matchup in the second round. So the Houston Astros are favored against a 108-win Red Sox. Thoughts?
We actually have two different opinions on this.
We do.
I think that they should be favored. They're the defending world champions. They had more major injuries than we did, in my opinion, outside of like Chris Sale, you know, and like guys like that. I mean, Springer was hurt this year at one point. Correa was hurt this year for a long time, actually. Altuve was hurt this year. And it's just, I think if they have all of their guys healthy, right? Like, you know, we say it all the time, if we could turn injuries off, I think they actually have a better season than we do, because I just think that their rotation's a little better, and I think the lineup is equal or maybe a bit better just because of their 6 through 9 guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think their lineup, I think you could say that the lineups are a toss-up, right? You can kind of pick and choose where you want. I think that the pitching staff is better in Houston, even if it is by a little bit. You could say a lot, you could say a little, whatever you want. Regular season, David Price was unbelievable this year. So you can't take that away from him when you're comparing that and you're comparing, you know, regular seasons.
Right.
The reason we have two different opinions is I think that the Red Sox should be favored. They beat the Yankees, who were a better team than Cleveland, won more games than Cleveland, you know, have better home field advantage than Cleveland. Playing in New York is a lot harder than playing in Cleveland. And the Red Sox beat them 3-1. They handed the Yankees their worst postseason loss ever, 16-1. They lost by 15 runs at home in New York. And the Red Sox had Xander Bogaerts out for 2+ weeks, Mookie Betts out for 2+ weeks, Chris Sale out for 1+, and all other little injuries in between there as well. Rafael Devers, Christian Vasquez, David Price missed 2 or 3 starts.
Blake,
if the Red Sox had all their guys, I think they would have won 120 games this year.
Yeah.
And
so we're not too far off.
Not too far off. I think Houston would have won 115 or 16 this year if their injuries were off, right? And that's with Oakland surging the way they did, just like Tampa also surged. I mean, if you go look at post All-Star break numbers, I'm sure Oakland and Tampa had very similar records. Tampa just dug themselves a way deeper hole than Oakland did. But this team, both these teams are very similar. Top of the lineup, probably better in Boston. Bottom of the lineup and overall lineup, better in Houston. You can pick which one you'd rather have. Bullpen-wise, I'm going to give it to Houston just because of Ozuna, but the Red Sox usually hit Ozuna pretty well, so that should be interesting, their new closer. And pitching staff-wise, if David Price can pitch in Game 2 like he did all year, I'll give it to the Red Sox. If he can't, I'm going to give it to Houston.
Yeah, we need David Price to show up. It's
just plain and simple.
He's the X factor.
Are you shocked that he is pitching Game 2, starting it?
Yes, very. Especially considering the success that he had last year. But he had success against them this year in the regular season, so it's like, I understand where Cora is coming from, but he's got demons, man. The guy's just got demons. It's like Smoltz in the early 90s, whenever he couldn't pitch in the playoffs and couldn't figure out why. Dude needs to figure it out. See a shrink, do anything possible to fix your psyche.
Yeah, absolutely. He has a lot of monkeys on his back, if you will, right? That's a term that people use all the time still. It's a good term. He has to get those monkeys off his back as a starter. He's got to get a win. Not even get a win. Just pitch a quality start. You know, go 6-7 innings, give up 2 or 3 runs, one, none. Just get a quality start under your belt so you could say, listen, I gave you 7 innings, 2 runs. You scored 1. That's not my fault. He needs to do that. He hasn't done that since, I don't even know when, 2013, 12, 14, something like that. And he didn't get the win in that game either. 2014, that's when it was. So it's been a long time for David Price. The one thing that is interesting about David Price, in playoff games where the temperature is 45 to 55 degrees, he's pitched 9 innings and has been lights out. Absolute lights out. Yep, he's been absolutely lights out in those circumstances. People always say about his, his tingly fingers. You know, Jared Carrabas has that nickname for David Price, Davey Tingle Fingers. But he always complains about the cold and everything like that. But when he has the opportunity to pitch in that specific window, which it will be for the Red Sox then, that will be the, projected, temperature going into the game. It's going to be around there, and he's lights out there. So this is the best opportunity he has to get it done, I say by far. He's playing against a team he dominated last year out of the bullpen, and he's playing at home. So two things big for for David Price.
Yeah, let's talk about the lineups real quick and about just how scary that Houston lineup really is.
Oh, it's terrifying.
There's no outs.
Not really. Maybe
no immediate outs. It's like 1 through 9 when you get down to if basically Tony Kemp plays, and even Tony Kemp hits as well.
Yeah, everyone does, and Kemp's fast.
Like very fast. Like Dave really Roberts fast. Faster.
Yeah, Dave Roberts faster is a great way to put it. And when you have that type of thing going on, not good for us anywhere for easy outs, right? But here's the thing. We got great defensive catchers, regardless if it's Sandy, regardless if it's Vasquez. Hell, even Blake Swihart has a better pop time and arm speed than San Leon, who is widely renowned as one of the catchers. We have some of the best defense in the league. JBJ should win a Gold Glove this year. Mookie already has 2. Benintendi's going to have multiple as he gets older. Infield-wise, Xander Bogaerts is a Gold Glover. Mitch Moreland is a Gold Glover. Second, Kinsler's a Gold Glover. Third base is a question mark, but other than third base, it's pretty good. So I'm not worried about defensively. I guess the monster helps us out here because these line drives they're going to hit could just be long singles.
Yeah, especially since they're used to pulling them all into the Crawford boxes. Good news.
Exactly.
Jose Altuve won't hit 3 home runs in the first game this year.
No.
Not with that wall.
I really hope he doesn't.
Yeah, me either.
So, yeah, I mean, lineup-wise, it's scary. But, who do you think? Flat out, who do you think's going to win?
Whatever comes out of our mouth, it's either homerish or we're just being negative is the problem. That's how it's viewed, at least. And Sox in 7.
Yeah, same. Sox in 7. And it's not even a homer thing. It's 7-game series. If the Astros win in 7 or the Sox win in 7, I mean, it's a toss-up, right?
There's a scenario, though, where the Astros win in 5.
Yep. There absolutely is. There's also a scenario that the Red Sox win in 4 or 5.
God, I would love that.
The Red Sox have gotten to Verlander before in the playoffs.
That's what I keep trying to tell people, and they're like, well, that hasn't been in 5 years. I'm like...
Oh, last year.
Yeah, I was like, it happened last year.
He came out of the bullpen, and Benintendi hit a long bomb, lefty-lefty, to take the lead in game 4.
Yeah, it was go-ahead, so it wasn't like it was nothing.
Yeah, it wasn't a nothing home run, no pressure. It was go-ahead home run, and you have Chris Sale, who's dominating this postseason. David Price pitched well against Houston last year in the playoffs.
I have a suggestion.
What's your suggestion?
Chris Sale not throw one goddamn pitch to Alex Bregman.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I said we just walk him.
Like at this point, the big joke is that he's his dad. It's no, a thing. That's true. It's a thing.
Yeah, it's true. Everyone's got their kryptonite. That's Chris Sales.
Yeah, David Price just so happens to be like when the clock hits or when the calendar hits October. But
David Price is basically a gremlin at this point. He has rules.
Yeah, he literally has rules. He can't pitch against the Yankees in normally.
Yep.
He literally is a gremlin. That is the best comparison that we can give to David Price.
Moving on to the NLCS, we have the Dodgers and the Brewers. The Brewers are probably the hottest team in baseball. They've won 11 in a row. They won a play-in game. They swept their NLDS series.
5-0 with Gio on the mound.
Yeah, 5-0 Gio on. They look unstoppable right now.
Yeah, and I don't know why we didn't see it coming. I mean, they had won, what, 6 coming into the play-in game?
Yeah, and played well in all the games that even that they lost.
Yeah, so I don't know what we missed there, how we missed it, but, I mean, Christian Yelich is showing why he's the MVP. He just continues to produce even in the postseason. And it's very impressive, very impressive.
It is. I think we might have missed it because of their starting lineup.
Or
it's
rotation.
Their rotation, yeah, it's very weak. Gio Gonzalez, demons in October. Wade Miley. Has anyone ever been afraid of Wade Miley?
Yikes.
Ever. Yeah, exactly. So that's their 1-2 in the LCS.
Yeah, no, it's not exactly Sale, Price, or, you know,
Verlander,
Cole.
Cole, yeah, or even Kluber, Carrasco. You know, it's not that scary. But what is scary is Josh Harder and that bullpen and the lineup. The lineup is relentless at the top.
It's absolutely just – it's going to be very, very hard to stop. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. And on the other side, you have a team that in the last 6 years has dominated the AL West. This year they had to play a play-in game, but they still won the division, so hats off to them. They went through a ton of injuries this year. I think everybody had the Dodgers dead at – you know, probably for the All-Star break that they had the Dodgers dead. I had the Dodgers dead there. Didn't know that the division was going to fall off the way they did. Arizona completely fell off the wagon. The Giants never had a shot in the first place, and the Rockies got hot late. So
we also couldn't account for the fact that they were going to trade for Manny Machado and Brian Dozier.
Yeah, I mean, they made big moves because they needed to. They needed to salvage that series. Their window was closing. And they know it, so they made the moves out there, and they had the money to do it, so why not? So this team is very similar to the Washington Capitals in hockey. The Washington Capitals, the last 2 years, have won the President's Trophy. They have Alexander Ovechkin, who is one of the greatest goal scorers, if not the greatest goal scorer of all time in the NHL. They never got past the second round with Ovi being there 10-plus years. Never did it. They lost to the Penguins the last 2 years. They've been up 3-1. They've been up in elimination games. They've choked every single time. Last year, they had no pressure. They didn't win the President's Trophy. They weren't the favorite. They weren't even the running-up favorite. They grinded through the playoffs. They got past the second round. They won the Stanley Cup in 5 games. This Dodger team is very similar to that for me. No expectations this year after all their injuries. They won their division, but not by much. Not even close to the best division in baseball. It's probably the 4th best division in baseball because the AL is completely better than the NL and the NL Central is better than the West, with the East being the weakest in the NL. But they have experience. They have Walker Buehler pitching out of his mind. Clayton Kershaw is Clayton Kershaw. If Kenley Jansen can come around to his normal self again, it's one of the best closers in the game, if not the best closer in the game. And they have a scary, very scary lineup, 1-9, which is, I think, better than the Brewers, 1-9. But they have to prove it at this point, right?
Yeah. And if you think about it, right, they are, where did my train of thought go, man?
It's the worst.
Like I literally had it and then somebody texts me and I looked down at my phone and I was like, shit,
I'm blowing it.
I don't fucking know. You say something.
I just said stuff for a while. Just take a second. I just talked for like 2 minutes. I just made a what's it?
Oh,
do you want to,
oh, and they we gotta talk about Matt Kemp comeback season.
Oh yeah, Matt Kemp was at one point an MVP favorite.
Yeah,
right.
And it's 2018.
MVP. Yeah, that's true.
Matt Kemp had an excellent season. One point, like you said, MVP favorite. Dude has completely rejuvenized this team after, you know, dying with the Braves and Padres for the last couple of years, and it has completely turned this franchise around. Not necessarily for like the past couple years, right? You know, because they went to the World Series last year without him, but they lost their best player, in my opinion, best position player, let's put it that way, and one of my genuine favorite players in this entire league, in Corey Seager. And you know, when that happens, it just completely takes the wind out of your sails. This team,
oh, 100%.
100%. With the injuries that they had this year, had no business even sniffing the NLCS. I mean, Justin Turner was out for the whole first month. Clayton Kershaw didn't look right for a lot of the year. And Kenley Jansen's going through a lot of shit right now. And he's finally back and finally trying to get back to his original form. But this Dodger team, I think, exceeded expectations. It didn't exceed expectations from the beginning of the season, right? But, like, after the first 2 weeks of the season, when, you know, it wasn't looking great, I think Dodger fans should be proud of this team.
Dodger fans should definitely be proud of this team. At the beginning of the year, they were kind of under the same belt as, like, the Astros, Yankees, and Red Sox, which it was, like, kind of close to World Series or bust, right?
Yeah.
But with the injuries, they happen. It's realist. It's real life. I don't think they were expected to even make the playoffs. And if they were, it was going to be like an NLDS kind of, you know, game four or five and lose. But they're crushing it. And here's my thing, though. I think Brewers in seven. Because I'm never going to pick the Dodgers until they actually prove that they can do it. Because in the last 6 years, they've probably been the best team in baseball. If you combine all 6 years. They've won their division. They've been to a World Series. They've been to multiple LCSs. They had the best pitcher. They've had some of the best position players. They have the ownership that wants to make trades and improve at the deadline in the offseason every single year. And they choke it away every year.
Well, up until last year, they were like the Toronto Raptors of Major League Baseball. Like they're going to win their division. Season. They're going to go to the conference championship. They're going to lose.
And you know it. You can book it.
Yeah, and it's just they're going to be there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and now maybe they change that tide, but I'm not going to pick them until they do it. And even if they win this series, they could sweep them. I'm not going to pick them the World Series until they do it. And I think 6 years of watching the Dodgers choke and fail gives everyone the right to question them, I guess.
Craig Counsell, the guy who I picked for my NL Manager of the Year in the preview show, can he outmanage Dave Roberts? And I think the answer is yes.
Well, yeah, of course. I think anybody can outmanage Dave Roberts. I don't think he's a good in-game manager. I think he's good for the clubhouse. I think he's good for the morale and the boys. But when it comes to X's and O's, if you will, he's not that great. Kind of very similar to a John Farrell type where, you know, once he actually got into the game, he became useless. And I just don't think that Dave Roberts is going to steal a game. I think, if anything, he might cost somebody a game. So, yeah, I think he can do it.
Two best managers in baseball have been eliminated to this point, in my opinion. If we're talking Tito, obviously, and then Joe Maddon.
Yeah, of course, Joe Maddon. Yeah, I think the best manager has been eliminated, obviously, which was Tito. I think after this year, the second best manager in the league's got to be Alex Cora already, right? No bias, no bolts, like no homer, no anything. I mean, what he did this year with injuries, with playing hunches. I mean, look what he did in the ALDS.
You know what the sad part is? The best manager might not even be in the playoffs if we're thinking about it.
Are you going to say Kevin Cash?
I was gonna think about saying Kevin Cash, and then I thought about what a job that Bob Melvin did in Oakland, and he did make the playoffs.
He did make the playoffs, and Bob Melvin did a great job in
Oakland.
With
that team.
Yeah, with that team, and on paper, that team looks awful. Very similar to the Rays, where on paper, their team looks awful.
They're the Rays of the West.
They are the Rays of the West, and both of those teams will be competing for a division spot next year, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't know if they'll win, but they'll be doing it. But
The Rays won't.
The Rays hopefully won't, and you never know about Oakland. I think the Astros are an absolute wagon. But so who do you got in this series? Brewers, you know, we just talked about the Dodgers a lot.
We just kind of shit on the Dodgers, so it's kind of hard for me to pick the Dodgers. So I think Brewers in six. I don't really know what to say. I mean, I think the series MVP, you know, how they have NLCS MVPs.
Yep.
I think it's going to be Josh Hader.
Yeah, I'm going Brewers in seven. I think it will be a close game. I think LA does a nice choke job at the end like they usually do. I'm going to go series MVP Christian Yelich, because why not? The guy's hot, and I know it's kind of the low-hanging fruit, but why wouldn't it be at this point? This is like Ortiz in 2013. You knew he was going to dominate. Christian Yelich has no sign of slowing down. If the Dodgers win it, though, in four, five, six, seven, doesn't matter, it's going to be Kershaw. Kershaw is going to be 100%. The MVP, because he's going to pitch two or three games. Well, I'll tell you what. He's gonna pitch. He's pitching two games. He will pitch game one and game five. If they make it to game seven, you'll see him. Unless it's a blow.
He's gonna have to be lights out. And Ryu's been great. Kershaw's been great. So it's like when we look at it, starting pitching, edge Dodgers.
Oh, big time edge. Not even a question.
Managing edge Brewers, lineup edge Brewers.
You think edge Brewers in the lineup? I think 1-9 Dodgers
might be
better.
I honestly think without having, now I'm like thinking, now I'm picturing that lineup in my head.
Manny Machado's better than Corey Seager.
Yikes.
So, I mean, they replaced Corey Seager with the better version of himself.
Yeah.
Either way, it's close lineup-wise. Doesn't matter who you pick, it's close. Yeah. I'm going Dodgers. You can go Brewers, not a big deal. But lineup's close. Starting pitching's not close. Bullpen's not close.
No. Especially with Kenley Jansen, like, at half health.
Yeah, one game great, one game giving up back-to-back solo shots. You don't really know what you're getting out of Jansen yet.
So you want to give X factors for each team?
Yeah. X factor for...
Start the NL, just because we're already here.
Yep. The X factor for the NL is going to be their whole starting pitching, just their starting pitching staff. I know it's not one specific person, but it kind of goes with the theme here of the Brewers. They need to get 5 or 6 innings out of their starters. If they go 3 innings, they're in trouble. Harder can't pitch 4 innings a night for 7 games. It's not going to work. So I think that's their X factor.
It's true. Dodgers?
Dodgers X factor, I'm going with Clayton Kershaw. I think he needs to be lights out. He needs to carry this team to the playoffs. It's his team. He's been the best pitcher in baseball the last 5 years. He needs to show everybody that he is still that guy and that he came back from his injuries. And if he can lead this team to 2 wins, they can actually win the series.
I think that Ryu is the big X factor for the Dodgers in this series, just because of the fact that if they can set the tone and get a big, big game 2 win, because it's what, Kershaw, Gio game 1?
Yep, and then Ryu, Miley.
So you have a really good chance to win game 1, and then you have an opportunity to shut that team out while your team just loads up runs on Wade Miley. They could be up 2-0 and still lose the series, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you got Hill in game 4 where, you know...
Blister fingers,
you don't know what you're getting out of him. And Bueller's been great, but, you know, does he fall off the wagon at some point? Exactly. So, but they can go up 2-0. So who's your X factor for the AL?
For the AL, it is Yuleski Gurriel.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because Yuleski Gurriel, I think, hit north of 380 with runners in scoring position this year or something stupid like that.
That's a stat, yep.
Yeah, it was absolutely just ridiculous. I mean, the guy always had guys on base. He was absolutely phenomenal. And if he can be like a cog in that machine, this Astros offense is absolutely unstoppable. If you want me to give a second one, right? Mookie Betts has to get going. We can't have what we've had in October in its entire career to this point and win this series. Everybody needs to be rolling. Everybody needs to be, you know, in sync. They need to be at peak performance in order to win this series, because that's a good baseball team on the other side in Houston. That's no slouch. This is the ALCS.
No, it's the second best team in baseball. It's the second best team in baseball and the second best team in American League. You're facing them in the ALCS. You have to show up. Mookie Betts needs to hit a home run, flat, simple. I don't care if it's a solo shot. I don't care if it's a two-run shot. I don't care if it's a grand slam at the bottom of the lineup. He needs to hit a home run, and he needs to start slugging the ball. We can't have a Stanton performance out of him and get a bunch of singles.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not going to win it for us, even though he bats out of the leadoff spot. I understand that. I'm not looking for 15 RBIs from him. I'm just looking for some doubles and some home runs. Yeah. So I'm looking for.
I need an RBI from you that's not from a walk.
Exactly. Although I will take a base loaded walk, but
I love bases loaded walks because the thing that follows I thoroughly enjoy too.
Benintendi with bases loaded, exactly. So my X factors for the Red Sox, it's not a hot take. It's David Price.
Yep.
But here's why it's David Price. If David Price pitches and wins game 2. Yes, that gets the monkey off the back for him. Yes, that means maybe in the World Series, if they make it there, he's your guy again, whatever. But the Red Sox could be up 2-0 after that game. They have Chris Sale in game 1. Chris Sale's pretty damn good. Justin Verlander, also pretty damn good. But the Red Sox have gotten to him in recent years, and even 5 years ago. as you can see with David Price, demons live on for a long time. Not saying that we're a demon for Verlander, but we're definitely a thorn in the side for them. David Price needs to pitch well, because if he pitches well in games two, we could be up 2-0, or we could be tied 1-1, because what if Sale loses? We need to get that win. Can't go down 0-2 to Houston. We won't come back to Boston.
First team that wins a road game wins the series.
Yes. Well, no, I don't think so. If David Price pitches awful in game two, but the lineup shows up, then I'm not worried about that with the Red Sox, because just like in, you saw what they did in New York when they got decent starting pitching, right?
You have to protect home field against this team.
It does suck this three in a row in Houston, because it's just hard to win. But David Price is my X factor, because if he pitches game two well, you know you're going to see him again in game six. I think this series goes six or seven. So you're going to see David Price. You could see David Price on the mound in an elimination game at home.
Yikes.
Either for a chance to go to the World Series or a chance to force game seven so Chris Sale can take us there. So I think he's the X factor there. On the other side, I think it's Bregman. I think Bregman needs to continue to do what he does, because he kills the Red Sox. He kills Chris Sale, and he's killed the whole league this year. If he continues to hit home runs, hit doubles, take walks, be a pest, and play great third base as well, they're going to roll. Just like Yuri Gurriel for you. I don't think their pitching staff is saying, like, no one's the X factor there. You know what you're getting out of all of them. Their bullpen used to be the X factor, but with Ozuna, it's pretty much locked up now. It's just to see if Ozuna can close the door against the Sox. I think a guy like Bregman, if he can continue to dominate, that's the biggest thing for them, because you know you're going to get out of Springer, you know you're going to get out of Correa and Altuve, but you even saw last year, I think it was Springer at one point, was like 1-for-16.
He wound up hitting 7 home runs in the postseason.
Yep, but at one point he was like 7-for-20-something with 7 home runs. So you never know with him, but you know if Bregman is consistent, it's a huge bat. It's very similar to Bogarts and JD Martinez, where if they get going, you already know you're going to get some singles and walks out of Mookie and Benintendi. If JD's hitting homers or doubles, Xander's hitting doubles or home runs like he was in against the Yankees and just hitting the ball far in general, it makes the lineup work. Bregman's the same way for me.
I enjoy playoff Benintendi, by the way.
Playoff Benintendi's been great, and I'm not upset about it.
Interview time. Yeah. He's a lot of fun, ain't he?
It was a great interview. We've had great interviews, and they've all been great so far, but this one was just fun. He's just very talkative, very outgoing, and just a crazy kind of story.
When you listen to this interview, I think people will understand what I'm saying. He went very in depth in such a short period of time.
Yeah, he did. We kind of, you know, we screen these interviews beforehand. We give him some questions. We kind of tell him where we're going to go with it. But, you know, every one of these guys continues to surprise us. I mean, we had to release Dan's interview because it was an hour long, because we just got on a rant. And this kid, I'm going to call him a kid because I'm young too. I'm only 26.
Younger than I am.
Myself kid. Yeah. So, you know, great, great guy. And you can tell he's going to have a great future.
Here is our interview with Oriole prospect Cameron Bishop. Enjoy it. All right, Cameron, who did you emulate growing up in Brea, California?
I was an Angels fan growing up, so I mean, for me, it was always David Eckstein. I know he was a second baseman, shortstop kind of guy, but I mean, for me, you look at him and you see, I mean, short in stature, doesn't hit a lot of home runs, but he's always out there, and he's sliding, he's diving, he's doing a lot of crazy things for his team, and for me as a kid, it was like you see him and you kind of can see like yourself in him. So I mean, just being able to. And he won the World Series with the Angels in 2002. So he was kind of like the hustle, play hard kid, because he didn't really have a lot of tools, I guess. So for me as a kid, it was like, oh, David Eckstein for sure.
I think he was a World Series MVP in that World Series too.
And I know he was also with the Cardinals, I think, when they won it.
Yeah, with that team too.
Yeah, with that team too. So he's just a winner. So I mean, obviously, I have to emulate a winner.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, why wouldn't you? So, yeah. You pitched your college ball at UCI, the University of California, Irvine. What made you pick UCI, and what was your favorite memory there?
Well, I was actually, for me, I was actually a two-way player going into high school, and as most people were, and I wanted to continue that into college, and when I was going through the recruitment process, Irvine actually was recruiting me as a hitter first, and then a pitcher second. So when I was making my decision, I really wanted to hit. So when they said, oh, we'll let you hit for sure, like, it's not an issue. And a lot of teams were more like, a lot of other colleges were, we're going to have you pitch, and then maybe we'll give you a shot at hitting, which really means that I'm probably not going to never hit and be able to hit. So I made that decision. I was like, all right, well, they're going to let me hit. They're going to let me play a position, and then they'll try me out at pitching, or I'll be a pitcher. So for me, it was an easy decision. Hey, I'm going to be a two-way guy at UC Irvine. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's really cool. I mean, you don't see often guys that want to do it two-way. You don't see many Otanis, right, coming up to the system and usually make that switch. So for you to want to be pretty headstrong about that, I mean, that's got to be great for GMs that, you know, you're flexible and you want to help out the team everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple good hitting. I think when I got to Irvine, I hit a little bit, but as, like, I kind of transitioned more into, like, a pitching role, my hitting was kind of put onto the side, which I was okay with, because when I started focusing more on pitching, my hitting really just kind of struggled. So it kind of was a nice natural, like, all right, you're not a hitter anymore. Let's focus up. Let's be a pitcher. So for me, it was a very easy decision going forward that, hey, I'm probably going to be a pitcher later on. But it was cool to be able to do it, like, my basically all 3 years at UCI, or 2 years, because I got my injury. But it was cool to be able to go out there. And, you know, in my freshman year, I would warm up in right field, and then they'd bring me in for, like, an eighth inning or ninth inning, and out of relief. So it was kind of fun. Like, I did throw out my pitcher's glove, and I'd go out there and toss an inning or try to get a save. So it was pretty fun.
It was like Little League. You're just ready to play anywhere.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, like, it was such, like, they literally throw out, like, the pitching coach would bring out the glove, and I'd come in from right field, and it was, like such, like, Little League, like, just kind of, like, little kid vibes, just going out there and doing that. So it was fun.
All right, so you had a bad oblique injury, which sidelined you for your junior season. Was there any thought of going back for your senior season just because of the injury, maybe to improve your stock a little bit more, or were you just ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think my agent's plan and my plan was, I mean, I'm coming back for my redshirt junior or senior year, just because I really hadn't proven myself as a pitcher yet. And so for me, like, going into that year, I was like, all right, I'm gonna be a stud. Like, I've really worked hard, and I've kind of proven myself in, like, inner squads and everything else. And so when I got hurt, it's kind of like, all right, well, I'll get better, I'll pitch in the summer ball, and I'll be ready to go for next year, and, like, not really an issue. But when I went to the Cape and I ended up pitching, like, really well, like, out of my mind, the Orioles came and said, hey, we'll give you, like, we have an offer. They drafted me, so that was cool. They drafted me based on kind of what they saw, like, two from my first 2 years. But it was cool because, I mean, they gave me a shot and said, all right, we came up with the money that you were asking for, and now I'm here. So it was cool. And I mean, it was kind of unbelievable because I don't think my agent thought that was going to happen, and I didn't think it was going to happen. So it was kind of, I had every intention of going back to Irvine until that moment. So,
yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's a pleasant surprise, right? It's not a bad thing to go get drafted and play in the major leagues.
Oh, no. I mean, I was stoked beyond belief. I mean, it was almost surreal because it was almost, like, very unexpected. So just having that, like, I'm in Massachusetts, I'm playing in the Cape, and then I basically get flown down, like, from Boston, and, like, I have to call, like, coaches and everything to try to explain to them, like, all the stuff that's going down. So it was kind of, definitely an emotional ride, but, I mean, I wouldn't trade it in for the world. I mean, I think I made the best decision for me. So in that case, it was definitely, like, a blessing.
That's, like, the best segue that we've ever had. That's what I'm talking about right there. So you pitched in the Cape. Yeah, no, you are. It's amazing. You pitched in the Cape, right? You're actually the first person, nobody else that we've interviewed so far has talked about the Cape Cod League. Can you kind of give the listeners what it's like, what's going on, and what exactly happens at the Cape Cod League?
So it's basically the best experience of all time. I mean, if any listeners out there who get invited to go there, I mean, it's really, really cool. I mean, you're playing against the best the best college baseball players in the country. You stay in like rad host families, just nice people. Like you get a ton of fans. I mean, coming from the West Coast, like Irvine doesn't get, I mean, maybe like 900 fans a night, like which isn't anything at all compared to some of the Eastern Texas schools or like SEC schools. So for us to go out there and play in front of like 2,000 or 3,000 people a night, just super nice people, just having a very laid back, having a good time, good atmosphere. I mean, there's really nothing like it at all. And I mean, for me, I play in the West Coast League. It's a summer ball league that goes from Oregon, Washington, and Canada. And having long bus rides is brutal. And for me as a player, I mean, our longest bus ride in the Cape was an hour. So it just kind of having that laid back aspect of all right, well, we got a nice easy bus trip. We're gonna play a game and we'll head back. We'll be home with plenty of time, plenty of rest. So and just in that sense, it's definitely the best league out there, and it's a great experience.
Yeah, heard many times from, obviously, you see all the greats that have gone through that league, and they always have high praise for it. And, you know, there's a good reason for it. A lot of high talent goes there. I mean, you're up in New England in the summer. It's a great area. I live in Rhode Island, so, you know, the Cape League's not far from me, and being up in Mass, you know, a bunch is, it's a really great place. I'm glad that people from, you know, all the way from California and everywhere else get to see.
Did we lose Dave?
Did I lose you? All right, we're back. All right, sorry. I lost it for a second.
Yeah, I lost for a second. So, speaking of, you were drafted, obviously, we talked about that. So you had a unique situation where you signed with Baltimore, correct?
Right.
And but the paperwork didn't go through exactly?
Yeah, I mean, it was, so I was, because of what my situation, because I didn't sign right out of the, right when I was drafted, because I was like, well, I need to prove myself kind of thing. I went to the Cape, and so we were planning on being there. So the last time they saw me was about 2 days before the deadline. So then they flew me out the next day. I got in kind of late, and the next day was the signing deadline. And so just kind of just some lateness on both parts. We were there, and I guess it kind of just panned out kind of weird. I mean, I don't even know what happened. It just kind of was a weird situation. But the paperwork got in late. And then so at that moment they said, oh, well, sorry, like we're not signing you. So, that was kind of an interesting process. Like, again, like that kind of goes back to like the whole emotional like roller coaster I was going through at the time. But luckily, like, things worked out in the end. We kind of got it all figured out. It wasn't an issue of, like, it really wasn't no one's fault. We kind of just had a little hiccup. So with that, it was kind of like, well, no, like, this is no one's really fault. No one's at fault here. I shouldn't be punished for this. And so MLB kind of was like, all right, it's okay. He can sign. So at that moment, I was like, oh, like, thank God, this is perfect. You know, I get to play now, and it all worked out in the end.
Had to be a sigh of relief for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, so for the week there, when they're deliberating, I actually went back to the Cape, and I was, I'd flown to Baltimore, then flown back to Boston, took a bus to the Cape, then took a bus back to Boston, flew down to Florida where I started spring training. So it was kind of like I was just all like the whole week was just me traveling and living out of my suitcase basically. So it was just kind of a crazy experience.
It sounds exhausting. Like that sounds like a hell of a week.
I'm still speechless on like just how I was feeling. Like I wasn't with my parents weren't with me, which like I mean I'm 21 years old, but still at that moment it's kind of like a life-altering experience almost in a way where, you know, it's a lot of uncertainty or like you don't really have anyone to talk to because, I mean, you're in a host family's house and so it was kind of a maturing moment, I think, for me and like just kind of understand like, hey, like, this is a business, they're trying to figure this stuff out, you gotta just be patient. So, I mean,
It was crazy, but I mean, I'm here now, so whatever, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty like unique though. Like, you can't really talk to anybody about it because it very rarely happens. So you definitely don't know anybody that it's happened to. So it's kind of isolating a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like when you try to tell someone like, well, what? Like that's so weird. Like, but for me, I mean, I've just put it down on the experience ticker, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I'll ever go through a negotiation or whatever it was, like something like that ever again. So
yeah, you're ready for arbitration, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So statistically, since you got to the minors, you've pretty much dropped in every possible category stats-wise. Is there something that you accredit to for your success to that? You know, is there a change that you made, maybe mechanical, something like that?
I mean, for me, I didn't start pitching until my senior year in high school. So I was kind of very much, when I went to Irvine, it was very untapped potential, kind of needed to figure out kind of my stuff with how to pitch and how to work different pitches and where to throw it and what works best for me kind of thing. So I was kind of a sponge, just kind of trying to learn everything I could as fast as I could, because I was getting thrown into situations where I needed to throw and I needed to throw well. So for me, a lot of it was just kind of maturing and figuring out like mechanics and figuring out what works best for me and just pitching more. So before I got hurt my junior year, I thought I was kind of primed to be a guy for Irvine and kind of have my breakout year. And so I think I kind of proved that in the Cape when I kind of got healthy again. Of, all right, he has learned figure out how to pitch. He has learned how to throw four pitches for strikes. He has moved on to that next level of being a pitcher instead of just kind of a thrower. So for me, I think just a maturity and throwing more really was the kind of factor for me that changed it all.
That's one of the biggest things that we talk about all the time too. And I don't think that people that don't watch baseball enough or don't play baseball understand the difference between pitching and throwing, because there's a significant difference.
Much harder to become a pitcher than a thrower. You're born with that natural ability to throw 105 with Chapman, but to locate and mix pitches is such an art.
Right, and just going along with that, it's really, when you look at, like, when you go from high school where you can get by throwing 93 by people, but the moment you reach that next level of college, I mean, you throw 93 down the middle, they're going to hit it, and they're going to touch it pretty good. So for me, it was like, all right, well, now I need to throw different pitches, now I need to locate better, I need to throw a changeup more, I need to throw my curveball and slider better. Neither over strikes, like they're not going to swing it out of the dirt. So just kind of maturing in that aspect of, all right, well, let's mature, let's get to business, get down to business, and let's figure it out. So I think that's probably why when people look at my stats, like in college, they're not good, you know. And that's just kind of, for me, it was just figuring it out. I mean, it's a long time, it's a long process. I mean, you see pitchers in the MLB kind of figuring out their stuff as seasons go on and as years go on, and people have to adjust and adapt, and that's really what I had to do going forward at Irvine and into professional baseball. So that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, you see guys all the time, middle of their careers, later in their careers. I mean, look at a guy like Daniel Murphy for the Cubs now. I mean, he was a nobody until, you know, that run with the Mets, and then he turned himself into a legitimate power hitter. And look at a guy like Verlander, who used to throw gas, and now he's more of a pitcher. You went the opposite route, but to be so self-aware at a young age where a lot of kids, I mean, obviously, from you're 21, you're a young guy, but when you're 19, you know, you probably were like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty good, you know, I'm doing all right. To be aware and kind of say, you know what, like, I need to kind of just tweak things, and I need to, you know, just adjust to make myself better. I mean, that's a great quality to have as a player and a person.
Yeah, and I think for me, too, it's like, when someone tells you, oh, like, you won't get away with this in higher levels, and then like, ah, no, like, it's, you're full of it, like, I'll be fine. And then all of a sudden you get in that situation, and then you're getting crushed. You're like, all right, well, all right, they were right. I need to figure stuff out, and I need to just be able to be more of a pitcher. I need to do all these things that
will help me in the long run. So for me, it's just like always improving, always trying to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you've obviously been from California to the Cape League to, you know, the summer leagues, you know, down to Baltimore, down to Florida for spring training, and you're only going to go up. You're, you know, a very high prospect in the Orioles system that is a very talented system given their recent, you know, failures at the major league level. But what's the best advice that you got on the way up, and what's the best advice you could give to somebody kind of similar to you, someone that, you know, didn't pitch until they were a senior and, you know, they wanted to do hitting and pitching, but then they focused up. You know, what's the best advice you could give? What's the best advice you got to this point now for you?
I think just for me, you know, dealing with coaches and dealing with their advice and dealing with their suggestions. Going into high school, I mean, my senior year in high school and college, you know, you're getting a lot of information thrown at you. You need to do this, you need to do that, you need to load more on your back hip, you need to land softer, you need to do this, you need to, like, you get so much stuff and you try to fit into their bubble or their form. And a lot of guys can't fit into a certain coach's, like, what their motto or their mechanical bubble is. So for me, what I would do is I would go talk to a coach or I would go see a coach and they'd suggest something. I'd try it out, and then if I didn't like it, I didn't keep it. And I would tell them, sorry, I wasn't comfortable with that. It didn't work for me. And so it's just kind of like finding someone or taking pieces of people's minds and using it for yourself, if that makes sense. Like, you don't have to take everyone's advice or suggestions, but you can take what you like and you can get rid of what you don't like, because there is no right solution of how to throw harder or be a pitcher. It's all what makes you comfortable and what makes you throw strikes and be a pitcher. So yeah. I mean, one coach's opinions isn't the end all. It's you go out and you find someone who you like and who you can appreciate and who makes you better. Like, I see a guy now who he legitimately teaches like 12-year-olds how to throw, and that's someone that I was like, I trusted, and he understands me and he gets me, and that way, you know, I like how he approaches it because it's so simple. You know, it's his motto and it's how he operates. And some guys need like a more scientific, like, drive line approach, and that's cool. Like, you do what you do to get better. But for me, I need someone who keeps it simple, you know. So, I mean, for me, as talking to a younger kid, it's like, all right, you may not like what I tell you to do if I'm coaching them, but that's fine. So let's figure out what you need to do to get from A to B.
It's all about having a toolbox, man. Like, especially when you get all this advice, you know, take what you want and get rid of what you don't. It's all about getting better at the end of the day. And if a piece of advice even gets you a little bit better, do it.
Yeah, and I've gotten hung up on some coaches who, like, told me to do something, and it, I mean, for a couple months I tried to do it, and I got totally messed up in the head, you know, and I couldn't break it, and I was like, I couldn't throw a strike, and it was an absolute mess because I was trying to figure out my stuff. But at the end of the day, I found the person that I liked, and he made me better. So, I mean, you'll find people who have a system that you don't like, and you try it out, and it kind of like messes with your head a little bit. But you got to go back to what you know how to do and what makes you better. So that's just kind of my two cents on that.
So first of all, you've been absolutely incredible, and we don't want to take up any more of your time, Dave. Anything, Dave?
No, sorry. Yeah, I lost you there for a second. Good thing it's at the end of the episode. No, dude, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, you're only 21. You talked like you're 30 already, man. You're going to be an unbelievable major leaguer when it comes to, you know, poise and everything like that. So I can't wait to see you come out to Boston and pitch against the Sox.
Awesome, man. Sounds good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.